This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right. Excuse me. Good way to start the day. Welcome to it. It is Wednesday. 5 days now. 5 days now until voters begin the process of selecting the next president of the United States. It begins in Iowa Monday in the evening. And the caucus goers there all teed up. But apparently Donald Trump is teed off. And he has said that if Megyn Kelly is going to be one of the moderators for the Fox News debate on Thursday tomorrow, that he would not participate. It's been set since last fall. But he had continued to say he would not participate, and now he has made it official, his campaign saying last night that the Republican primary frontrunner does not plan to participate in the Fox News Google debate. And that announcement came shortly after the lineup was announced. Trump's campaign confirmed the decision to Fox. The Republican presidential candidate already had said he probably would not consider going. He believes that Megyn Kelly is biased. He apparently believes he's biased. What was that, Alex? Yeah, let's go with that.
Fox is playing games, yeah. Fox is going to make a fortune. I told Fox you should give money to the Wounded Warriors. I'm not a fan of Megyn Kelly. I think she's a third-rate reporter. I think she, frankly, is not good at what she does. And I think they could do a lot better than Megyn Kelly. And so I'm going to be making a decision with Fox, but I probably won't bother doing the debate. I see they picked me as number one. Not only number one by far, but probably I won't be doing the debate. I'm going to have something else in Iowa. We'll do something where we raise money for the veterans and the Wounded Warriors. We're going to do something simultaneously with the debate, but most likely I'm not going to do the debate. I didn't like the fact that they sent out press releases talking about Putin and playing games. I don't know what games Roger Ailes is playing, but what's wrong over there? Something's wrong. But when they sent out that press release talking about, I said, what are these people playing games? So most likely I won't be doing the debate.
And he made that official shortly thereafter. So that was the warm-up, if you will. So Trump not participating at all in this debate. Instead, like you heard him mention there, he's doing an event for veterans and wounded warriors, which might garner him, different kinds of support. He's doing a big get-together for veterans and wounded warriors, saying that we owe our veterans a lot more than they've gotten currently. So, all right, so we're still doing our voting here, and I want to keep you up to speed on that. We are conducting the Gruber primary, if you will. 10 Republicans there. Hundreds of votes cast so far. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, Donald Trump holding a lead, but it is a tight lead over Ted Cruz in our polling so far. I'll give you the final numbers down the road, probably on Monday. Marco Rubio running in third place is the shadow candidate, if you will. But still, after all of these votes have been cast, everybody has received votes except Jeb Bush. It's baffling. There's got to be a Jeb Bush supporter out there. I mean, make no mistake, I'm not a huge fan of Governor Bush, but he's not awful. And if he were the nominee, I would support him. You see, here's the conversation I got into again with some folks on social media last night. Well, if Donald Trump's the guy, I can't support that. Well, you would then prefer Hillary Clinton? Well, I don't want Donald Trump to be the commander-in-chief. Well, you'd prefer Hillary Clinton to be commander-in-chief, the one who apparently let our folks down in Benghazi. You'd like that woman to be your commander-in-chief? Because in effect, if you, well, I'm going to vote for Libertarian or a third party. Really? How's that going to help? So you don't vote for either one of the candidates that's actually viable, like they say in Iowa. Well, I'm going to protest. I'm going to vote for them. Well, protest all you want. In effect, you would then be supporting, if Hillary's the nominee, Hillary to be your commander-in-chief. I don't know anybody in the military that supports that. I don't know anybody in military or ex-military retired. I don't know anybody who supports that. I spend a fair amount of time with wounded warriors and so forth each fall. And I've not come across anyone yet that's in the military who is a wounded warrior, who is a veteran. You know, protesting. You folks sitting home and protesting. You go ahead and pat yourselves on the back because you gave us Obama's second term. And how does that work out for you? How did that hope and change work out for you? Well, you know, they're protesting. Yeah, well, who are you protesting to? Because nobody cares. Nobody knows who finished third. Well, I voted for the candidate that finished third. And so what? Who finished third, you know, at the Daytona 500? Do you have any idea? No. At any rate, so Donald Trump is out. And then Ted Cruz, of course, stepped to the closest microphone and said, if Donald is afraid to defend his record, it speaks volumes. His campaign, like I said, put out a statement Tuesday night confirming he will not be participating in the Fox News debate. Now, coming up here later on the program, we're talking to Chad Livengood from the Detroit News, who is, he's on the ground there. He headed out to Iowa yesterday, and so maybe he can give us an idea of what the temperature is of the voters out there in Iowa now that Donald Trump says he's not going to participate. Now, for historical perspective, Ronald Reagan skipped Iowa pretty well altogether back in 1980. You may not remember this. Ronald Reagan skipped Iowa pretty much altogether. Didn't think it fit him. Didn't think he was going to make it. He was, you know, considered the favorite, I suppose. But he skipped a debate in Iowa. He skipped pretty much doing anything with the caucus goers in Iowa. And George Herbert Walker Bush won the Iowa caucuses as a result. Reagan set his sights on later primaries, which obviously worked. But isn't it interesting to look at the perspective that Donald Trump isn't the only guy that thinks he doesn't need to do a debate in Iowa if he's the front runner. He's not concerned about it. Ronald Reagan wasn't concerned about it either. So before you get yourself all worked up and lathered up over, oh, Trump did it. Well, Ronald Reagan did the same thing. Consider that when you're vetting your argument as to how it should be handled. All right, still to come today. Julie Gundlach will be here. Charlotte Hayes from the Independent Women's Forum. Mary Claire will be here of Talk Schools of Choice. Chad Livengood, like I said, from the Detroit News. Tim Stout will be here, the Dean of Sports. And later this week, don't miss Mad Dog. He's going to be on the program with us. I think we got him slated in for Friday. And then when we come back, I'll tell you about the interesting experience I had yesterday with Nancy Grace on CNN. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Welcome back to it on a Wednesday. Again, please don't forget to vote. The Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. Click like. Make sure you vote and share it with your friends. Share it everywhere. Trying to get as many votes as possible to get as big a sampling as possible. This hour of the Steve Gruber Show brought to you by the Michigan 529 programs. Making sure your kids and grandkids get the education they need. To learn more, go to savewithmi529.com. Savewithmi529.com. So I had this, I was contacted yesterday by the producer for the Nancy Grace program on CNN, Headline News. Asked me to talk about this Melissa Mitten case, the woman in Okemos who is accused of killing her first infant newborn daughter, and now it seems it's likely she killed her infant newborn son a few months later. So, anyhow, so they called, and it was an interesting experience and an exercise. I talked to the producer ahead of time, and yeah, I can do the story, no problem. And it's going to be a phone interview, not a live on camera interview. So anyhow, they're late, but when I get on the line, I'm of the impression that it's going to be me and Nancy talking for however many minutes. And so she comes to me, asks me the first question, whatever, and I answer it. And boom, then she goes to another guest. Of course, I can't see any of this. And then she goes to two, three, four, five, like five other guests, and finally came back around to me. But it was a very, I don't know, it was an interesting exercise. I didn't realize how many people disliked Nancy Grace until I put it up on Facebook that I was going to be on the program. And apparently a few of you folks just don't care for her. Fair enough. But it was an interesting exercise. So just sharing it with you. Kind of a fun thing to do. Different way to spend the afternoon, that's for sure. All right. So have you heard about the school shooting in Canada that happened just a handful of days ago? Because if not, that would tell you a lot. A school shooting left four dead in northern Saskatchewan, and it's pretty much gotten no attention here in the American media. You know, and of course, President Obama has pretty well assured us that this sort of thing doesn't happen in other countries, especially ones that have strict gun control measures like Canada. Yeah, it's not being paraded around. This does come. Here's a bit of a report from CNN. Police arrested a suspect in a shooting that left four people dead in a small town in northern Saskatchewan. A call came in Friday afternoon about a shooting at a school in La Loche. Officers went to the La Loche Community School, arrested a suspect, and seized his weapon. In addition to the school, police are investigating a shooting at a residence in the town of 2600. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who's left of Bernie Sanders, I think, probably going to make a move to take away more guns. That would be my guess. Well, that's what liberals do. You know, when government fails, the answer is not, well, let's try something different. The answer is more government. It's always the same. It's always more government. How do we solve the problem? More government. Raise taxes and more government. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I'm just telling you. That's how that'll play out. But my point being is that you've heard nothing about it because they don't want to tell you about Canadian school shootings when they happen, because that wouldn't play into the narrative very well, now would it? It wouldn't play very well in the narrative at all. All right, so I don't know if you heard about this one either, but I'll bring you up to speed on Eamon Bundy. Eamon Bundy, this is part of the standoff in Oregon. The leader of a group of armed protesters who had occupied that federal wildlife refuge in eastern Oregon for 24 days, arrested along with four others yesterday after a traffic stop. But there was a gunfight. One person left dead. The FBI and Oregon State Police arrested Eamon Bundy, who happens to be 40 years old. His brother, Ryan, 43. Brian Cavalier, also in his 40s. Shauna Cox, Ryan Payne. All happened around 4:30 yesterday, local time. Three others arrested separately. The FBI said all eight face a federal felony charge of conspiracy to impede officers of the United States from discharging their official duties through the use of force, intimidation, or threats. Neither the FBI nor Oregon State Police released any further details about what set off the gunfire at the traffic stop. One of those arrested, described only as a man, suffered non-life-threatening injuries and was treated at a hospital nearby. Another man, who was the subject of a federal probable cause arrest, was killed in the shootout. The Oregonian newspaper reports the dead man, 55-year-old Robert Finnicum. The paper said Finnicum's daughter, in making the identification, is what they hung their hat on. Authorities said no other information about the deceased would be released pending formal identification by the local medical examiner's office. Now, the protesters were heading to a public meeting in the town of John Day, about 70 miles north of Burns, to address local residents about the occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge when the traffic stop took place. Apparently, hundreds turned out at the John Day Senior Center after they were told the guest speakers would not be appearing. The Harney County Hospital in Burns was placed on lockdown out of concern the protesters might cause a disturbance there as well. Eamon Bundy's group, calling itself Citizens for Constitutional Freedom, took control of that headquarters back on January the 2nd. We'll see where it goes from here. There are a lot of disputes in the Western United States when it comes to land, because the federal government seems to seize land and take land for a variety of purposes on a regular basis. It does not sit well with many people of the West. It does not sit well. So before you dismiss it out of hand, you should understand the issues involved. 25 after on a Wednesday. We'll be back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
It is Wednesday here on the program. If you haven't heard, Donald Trump is bolting from the presidential debate for tomorrow. He says Fox News, specifically Megyn Kelly, is biased against him, and therefore he's not going to participate. And again, for historical context, Ronald Reagan, and no, I'm not comparing Ronald Reagan to Donald Trump. I'm making a comparison for you to have a historical context, which is Ronald Reagan did not participate in Iowa at all in 1980. He didn't figure it was a good place for him, and he didn't focus any time or effort there. As a result, he lost there and lost badly to George H.W. Bush, and you know how that thing turned out. So skipping Iowa and not participating in an Iowa debate like Ronald Reagan did in 1980 does not necessarily mean that it's the end of the line for a candidate. We'll keep an eye on that, of course, and try to figure out where that goes. Of course, the next president of the United States, one of the big challenges will be foreign policy, because in the estimation of many, myself included, the foreign policy of the United States is, well, it's not very well defined. It's in a shambles. Vladimir Putin and others are taking up space in the vacuum. And it now seems the White House is trying to delegitimize Russian President Vladimir Putin in the eyes of the Russian people in an attempt to weaken his hold on power. That's what I find in a new article by L. Todd Wood, our good friend, joining us from the Washington Times again today. Todd, welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. So tell me about this attempt to delegitimize Vladimir Putin.
Well, you know, I saw that, and I just thought it was extremely bizarre. I mean, really, but just because of the timing. I mean, you know, Obama's been in office 7 years and has obviously had the Russian reset or whatever, but here in the last year of his administration, his presidency, he's decided to try and, as you say, delegitimize Putin in the eyes of the Russian people, which means he's basically come out and said Putin is corrupt. Well, he's known that all along. Everybody knows that. Putin is probably the richest man in the world. He's stolen billions from Russia. That's nothing new. So that wasn't really the question. For me, the question was, why now? And so if you take that a little further, I mean, you know, there's negotiations going on with Ukraine over Syria. Russia is, you know, spreading throughout the Middle East. They're looking at more air bases up near Turkey. You know, so they're not holding back. And I just don't understand why Obama chose now to do this. Either it's a negotiating tactic, or, you know, Obama doesn't like Putin. And if you want to talk racism, he's said a lot of things about Putin, which I thought were really unpresidential. And maybe this is just another one of those lines. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. But to say unpresidential, you know, that's almost, you know, from where I stand, he's done a lot of odd things as president.
Yeah.
And so it's not out of character, I suppose, to have unusual things happen. I mean, that's not unfair, right?
No, you're right. It's not out of character. I mean, I just, you know, when he said, well, look at Putin, he's got a slouch, you know, Russia doesn't make anything, you know, they're a third-rate country. I just don't think you talk to Russia. It's just not the way you conduct diplomacy, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, it may be true, but why do that? I don't understand.
So what is the, and you've spent a lot of time in Eastern Europe and Ukraine and places that have become volatile since Barack Obama took office. What do you think the playing field looks like in that part of the world going forward for the next president?
It's a challenge across many fronts. It's not just Ukraine. It's the Baltics. It's Moldova. It's Belarus. You know, Belarus, which means White Russia in Russian, is, you know, naturally part of the Slavic Empire, or, you know, historically. And Putin recently said, okay, Belarus, we want an air base there. We're going to send you the agreement. And then they said, well, we really don't want you to have an air base here. And we're our own sovereign country. And if we want to have an air base with yours here, we'll ask you. But that is, you know, so those are the fronts where Putin is looking to really recapture the old Soviet territory, not in a communist way, but in a totalitarian way. And if you look at Moldova, same thing. Georgia, same thing, where they still have troops in both of those countries, Russian troops. So it's a challenge across the board.
Now, financially speaking, this downturn in oil prices, I've talked about it, of course, hurting Russia and other countries, exporters of oil like Russia. How much do you get a feel or a sense that the downturn with oil trading, what, below $30 a barrel now? This obviously was the lifeblood financially for Vladimir Putin and the Russian machine. With that money, you know, a fraction of what it was, what does it mean to the coffers for Russia?
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, it's really, really bad. The economy is collapsing. I spoke to someone in Moscow yesterday. You know, their ruble is hitting all-time lows. It was like at 83 only a few days ago to the dollar. A few years ago, it was at 28. So, you know, the currency is collapsing. The economy is collapsing. There is not yet social unrest in the streets, but that's what he's worried about, and he has a history of starting international conflicts in order to take the Russian people's eyes off their internal problems. And, you know, we've talked about this before, and I think that is almost a given that it will happen. And if you look at what's going on in Syria and the Middle East, I mean, that is classic. I mean, he's spreading Russian influence. That will not stop. His military spending will not stop. You know, the Russian people will just suffer and suffer more. That's what's going to happen.
Right. He'll defend the military spending at the expense of everybody else. No
sure.
question.
Yep. Yeah.
So as you look at, you know, okay, so was it a good idea for him to take over the Crimea? Was it a good idea for him to expand that way? It's been expensive as well. It's not that easy to manage. It's kind of messy, from what I understand, reading some of your articles and others and other information. Do you think it was a good move for the Russians overall?
Crimea has historically been Russian. That just touched from the genesis of the Russian people. I mean, he just touched that nerve in a way that they really wanted it to be touched. So that, I think, will not hurt him at all. East Ukraine is another story, and that's why I think he's backing off of that, because it's hugely expensive. It hasn't brought him anything but sanctions from the West. And if you look at what Kerry's doing, I mean, they're going to give, you know, even the French are saying the Russians are going to get sanctions relief. So that is, you know, he's going to negotiate that away, and then that's just a smart chess move on his part.
Yeah, so I guess you have to build morale where you can, I suppose. Russia clearly, I mean, Mitt Romney was right, wasn't he? That Russia was the biggest
player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he'd be exonerated at this point if there was anybody that was intellectually honest in the media and so forth. But not many people mentioned the fact that Mitt Romney was chided by Barack Obama. The 1980s called it. They want their foreign policy back. Really? We left this guy in charge? A little frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, really. It is. They have a expansionist bone, aggressive bone in their blood or in their body. It's been that way for centuries, and it's not going to change.
Yeah, no question. Todd Wood, always a pleasure, my friend. Where can people find you?
LToddWood.com is the best place to look me up, or Washington Times.
All right, Todd. We'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
There you have it. L. Todd Wood, everybody. Great articles, by the way. Threat Assessment is the column that he writes. Look it up. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
All right, 45 after the hour. At one of the Trump stops yesterday, if you missed this, Donald Trump interrupted by demonstrators wearing I Stand With My Muslim Neighbors t-shirts in bright red and blowing whistles. After the first incident of being interrupted by a protester without a whistle, Trump said he likes protesters because it's the only time that cameras with film shots of his audience and people see how big our crowds are. So anybody want to protest, go ahead. It's fine, he said. Later in the speech, a loud whistle interrupted Trump mid-sentence. And he said, who the hell is that, a protester? So Donald Trump got, you know, in a bit of a tiff with the protesters there. And then a Trump supporter spoke up, interrupting Bernie Sanders during a Sanders rally. A lot of this back and forth, apparently. But he is interrupted at an Amherst, Massachusetts rally by a Trump supporter hollering at him. Shame on you, Bernie. Here's a Trump supporter worried about Mr. Trump's money, Sanders said as the crowd booed. Anyhow, so also yesterday, Donald Trump in a battle with a reporter, arguing over a quote that is during a press conference. Listen to this, bite two.
The full soundbite from Tim Russert, you said to him was, I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion.
Correct.
But I'm very
pro-choice. Why didn't you read that before?
I pulled it up the Wi-Fi.
No, but why didn't you read that before? You didn't read, I hate the concept
Trump,
of abortion.
I'm reading it to you now. My question
excuse
is,
me, excuse me.
Are you a trustworthy?
Excuse me, very trustworthy.
Chameleon?
More so than you. Because you know what? You didn't read the question. See, when you quoted Tim Russert, you didn't read what you just said. Read it again.
I'll read it now.
Go ahead.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion.
Okay, you didn't read. Why didn't you say, and when you asked the question before, that I hate the concept
because
of abortion.
Because the question from the pro-life group
can't be trusted.
No.
You were quoting Tim Russert, you were quoting Tim, and you were quoting me. Why didn't you read my quote the way I said it?
Sir, I tried to pull it up, and I didn't have Wi-Fi.
Well, then you got to get Wi-Fi, okay? Well, don't ask me questions like that. You're not a very good reporter doing that.
You know, you better come prepared. I've chewed some people up on this program from time to time that weren't prepared. Can you imagine not being prepared for Donald Trump? He will eviscerate you, disembowel you. He will embarrass you. And that was a weak answer, by the way. Well, I didn't have Wi-Fi, so I couldn't, you know. Well, get it right before you ask the question. I would say that, having worked for NBC for many years as a reporter, get it right, especially if you've got somebody on the receiving end of it that knows the game, and Donald Trump knows the game as well as anyone, obviously. All right, so 5 days to go, and like I said, we've taken a few hundred votes here on the poll on the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page of who would become president, who would you vote for, and so far, Donald Trump is winning, although not by as much as he was yesterday. For whatever reason, Martin O'Malley if this proves to be accurate, I'll be stunned. It shows Martin O'Malley winning the polling so far, and I don't know if that's accurate. People just messing around. Donald Trump in the lead of the Republican voters. One of those picking up a few votes way back in the pack is John Kasich, who you've heard me talk about from time to time. And boy, have I gotten a lot of vitriol from listeners. I've spent time with John Kasich. I used to cover him when I was working for NBC in Ohio, and I think he was a decent congressman. He's been a decent governor. Is he perfect? There is no such thing as a perfect candidate. Well, at any rate, the governor picked up the endorsement of the Boston Globe Monday and its editorial board, urging New Hampshire Republicans to vote for an experienced political figure with a record of results. Bite three, take that.
Well, I'm really honored by it. I mean, that's an incredible newspaper, and to receive their endorsement, it's a big deal to me personally. It's a significant achievement in my career to have a newspaper of that kind of stature that has seen fit to endorse me. We also received some other good news here. The Concord Monitor, which is another very significant newspaper in New Hampshire, also came out and endorsed me today. And when things are go well like that, you kind of want to ride low in the saddle, as one old mentor of mine once said. I'm very, very grateful and humbled by the support that's coming our way, but we still have a long way to go.
I don't know if that's enough to buoy the campaign. John Kasich running third or fourth in New Hampshire. He has spent the majority of his effort in New Hampshire. And another part of what the Boston Globe said in issuing its endorsement, by voting for Kasich, New Hampshire can reward a candidate whose politics have been largely positive and rebuke those candidates who have spent their campaign appealing to voters' fears and biases. Well, we'll see where that goes. I said early on that I thought John Kasich had a unique resume and might be uniquely qualified to run for the office. And again, like I said, I got a lot of vitriol from listeners, and so it is. Doesn't change the fact that John Kasich spent 18 years in Congress and did a fine job, and is a two-term governor of Ohio, where he's done a pretty respectable job as well. And though you may not like everything he's done a lot of things that are, like the Boston Globe said, quite positive. We'll watch how that plays out. Kasich, like I said, spending all of his time and resources in New Hampshire. Will it be rewarded? We shall find out. And we shall find out more tomorrow, because Donald Trump is not on the stage to suck the oxygen out of the room. Maybe it'll give voters a chance to see some of the other folks that are actually running for president. I mean, that could be the silver lining for the folks left behind. Ratings may not be as high, but they might be able to get their message out in a more effective manner. It's Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.